So we are now on to two more mitzvahs today in our count. We're up to 544 and 545, all together as one. This mitzvah is a unique mitzvah. It's somewhat known, but not often done, which is Shiluach HaKan, sending away the mother bird. So I want to discuss what this mitzvah is, how to do it, what's the idea behind it. So the Torah tells us in Parshas Ki Tsetse, this is in Perchav Beis, chapter 22 of Devarim, it says, Ki kari kan tzipa lefanecha, a bird's nest occurs before you, baderech on the road, b'chol eitz on it, any tree, all arts on the ground, efrochim beitzim, and there's chicks or there's eggs, ve'imra vetzal efrochim or beitzim, and the mother bird is on top of these chicks or on top of these eggs. So the Torah says, L'sikach e'ma ha'ban, you're not allowed to take the mother off of the children. Shalit ha'shalach ha'sa'im, send away the mother, v'sa'banim tikach lach, and take for yourself the children, l'man yitav lach, so that it shall be good for you, v'rachta yamim, and you shall have lengthy days. So that's the mitzvah. So there's two parts of the mitzvah. There's the positive command, which is send away the mother, and the negative command, the prohibition not to take the mother off the eggs. So I want to discuss, I think this is kind of not understood so well, misunderstood, how to do this, what this is all about, and I want to discuss it from a few different angles. So the first and foremost, the actual prohibition in and of itself is not to remove the mother bird off the eggs, meaning that if you have a mother bird and you want to take the eggs, you can't just lift the mother bird off the eggs, just send her away, instead of sending her away. Just looking for a page over here that I can't find. Just to send the mother bird away. I lost the page in mine. Let's see if I can find it. But if you were to take the mother bird in your hands, here it is, and move the mother bird off, that's a problem. So it has to be sent. We'll talk about how to send her, but it has to be sent away. Once you send the mother bird away, you're then allowed to take the children, whether it be the chicks or the eggs, from under the mother bird. Just as an aside, this is like a grammatical note. No, the mitzvah is referred to as, some say Shiluach HaKan, some say Shiluach HaKen. So just a grammatical note in Hebrew. The word, the mitzvah really should be called Shiluach HaKen, because when the word, Ken means nest. When the word nest stands alone, the word is Ken. When the word nest is attached to another word, you'd say Kan Sipor, a bird's nest. So even though I think the common usage is Shiluach HaKan, but really the word would be Kane if you're using it by itself. But we'll call it Shiluach HaKan, because that's how it's referred to typically in everyday speech. And the Torah says Kan Sipor. It's talking about a bird's nest. So you get to a bird's nest, and you want to take the eggs. Don't take the mother off. Send the mother away, take the eggs, take the chicks.
Is this any bird?
So I'll get to that. So the first question I want to ask is that, do you have to do this, or is this just optional? I mean, let's say I'm not interested in the eggs, I'm interested in the chicks, but I see a bird nest in front of me. So must I go and send off mother bird, or can I just walk right by? So there the consensus amongst the authorities is, the poskim say, that it's a mitzvah that you don't have to do unless you actually want to take the eggs. I mean, you're allowed to, but you don't have to do it. So if you see a bird's nest and aren't interested in the mitzvah, you're allowed to walk away from it. You don't have to do the mitzvah. Doing the mitzvah is always a good thing. It's a mitzvah. It's a special merit. We'll talk about the different merits that come from this mitzvah. But there's no need to seek out a bird's nest for sure to do this. And even if you see one, you don't have to do it. If you want to, you could.
In the hanging baskets around my house, I get like 3 and 4 bird's nests every spring. I thought I could charge money. People
come in. They can still come do it, but they don't have to. Right. I'm sure it's the right time for birds also. We'll talk about that too. So it's definitely praiseworthy to do it. If the opportunity arises, praiseworthy to do it, but you don't have to. If you don't feel like you want to deal with birds and eggs and chicks, you can just walk away. When the mitzvah is done, there's no bracha to make on the mitzvah. It's interesting. There's actually a dispute if there's a bracha to be made, but the ruling would be not to make the bracha. So when you go to do this mitzvah, don't make any bracha, just do the mitzvah. The way the mother's position is very important. If the mother bird is not on top of the eggs or on top of the chicks, there's no mitzvah. She has to be actually on top of her eggs or chicks. So if she's on the side, even if she's like, next to them feeding them worms or something, you can't do the mitzvah in that case. It has to be she's actually on top of them. So when she's incubating the eggs, that's very common. Even when there's chicks there, the birds do sit on the chicks sometimes to keep them warm, but you have to be sure she's actually on top, touching the eggs or chicks, not on the side. That's very important. Now, how do you send the mother bird away? So the halacha really is you could do anything you want besides take her off. Meaning the common practice usually is taking some sort of stick and kind of driving it off. I mean, you've seen pictures of people doing it before with an umbrella or something. That would work. You can even like make noises. You can that, if the mother bird flies away because you're making noise, it's also the mitzvah. If you scream at it, if you throw a rock at it, whatever you do to get that mother bird to fly away, that's your mitzvah. So it doesn't matter how it, you can shake the tree.
You can throw a rock at it?
Yeah, just to get it. I mean, don't hurt it, but just to knock it off, to get it to fly off the nest. That's what you could do. I don't know if that'll work. I mean, they're pretty protective of their birds, but of their chicks. But whatever would work to get it off, you could shake the tree. You know, anything that'll get the mother bird to move is the mitzvah. How far must she go to be considered sent off? Doesn't matter. As long as she's off of the nest, that's good enough. So as long as whatever you do something, get her off the nest, you've done your mitzvah.
Off the nest? Or what if she just moved to the side and was still on the nest?
I think she'd be off the nest, out of the nest, off the nest.
Since she fell.
There's actually, you know, people misunderstand the mitzvah, and we'll talk more about what it means. But it's you know, most of us think the purpose of this mitzvah is because I want the eggs, or I want the chicks. It's actually disputed if you even have to take the eggs or chicks to do the mitzvah. Some say the mitzvah is just sending the mother bird, and that's it. And nothing to do with the eggs or chicks. So the common understanding is that you should definitely take those eggs or chicks afterwards, and the mitzvah, part of the mitzvah is to actually acquire the eggs or chicks once it's done. But there are different opinions that say the mitzvah is just sending a mother away. Finished, which is very interesting. Yeah.
So this is definitely a hoax.
Yeah, so I'll talk about reasons behind it. We'll talk about some ideas behind it. But that, okay. if you don't want the eggs, then certainly it's very hard to understand what it means, right? If you want the eggs, we kind of get it. If you don't want the eggs, just sending off mother birds is a funny mitzvah to have to do. Yeah.
I thought you said toward the beginning of the majority opinion that says this applies is this only if you're going to take the eggs or the chicks.
That's the majority opinion.
That's
yeah.
The majority.
I'm just pointing out there is an opinion that says that just sending off the mother bird itself is a mitzvah, okay, regardless of the eggs or chicks. Right. Correct. So for our purposes, we would do this mitzvah. Yeah.
I thought that the mother is not supposed to see the eggs getting taken. You're saying she just has to be out of the nest and she can view it?
Right. She could view it.
You put the eggs back in. Let's say you really don't want the eggs.
Yeah. So the procedure should be, if we were to do the mitzvah, the procedure would be, you know, get the mother bird off the nest somehow, then pick up the eggs to make an acquisition, make a kinyan on it. So you should lift up the eggs in your hand, and then you can put them back afterwards. You don't have to keep the eggs. And the truth is, if let's say there's several eggs in a nest, so it's not so simple someone can do the mitzvah on the same egg you did, but you could do egg number one, and someone said egg number two, something egg number three, and you can do five mitzvahs, you know, on this. If there's five eggs, you can do five mitzvahs on this bird's nest, and that'd be fine. There's no obligation to have to keep the eggs or eat the eggs or eat the chicks. That's not your obligation. It's just it's advisable to acquire it, and then you can put it back if you don't want them anymore. You could keep them if you want, but you don't have to. Yeah.
Will the mother go back once they're touched?
Yes, they will. That's actually a myth. And people think that the mother doesn't go back when the eggs or the chicks are touched, but scientists have proven that's not true. So she will go back.
How about if you mark the egg?
If you mark the egg,
well, then I would put one, two.
Will she go back? Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure. Right. I don't know that study. We can make our own study for that one. When we say it's for eggs or chicks, it applies until the chicks are big enough to fly. Once the chicks can fly, there's no more mitzvah anymore. So it'd be really newborn chicks or the eggs before they're hatched. If the egg is unfertilized or the egg is cracked, it's not a mitzvah to do this either. Has to be like a, I guess we'll call it an egg which has potential to becoming life.
How are you going to tell?
It's hard to tell. But if you were to somehow know. That's true. It's very hard to tell. Maybe scientists have some sort of way to tell. I don't know. But we certainly couldn't tell. That's correct.
Ultrasound.
Put it into the ultrasound before you do the mitzvah.
So you have to make all kinds of a tanai. You send away the mother in case it's a fertilized egg.
Yeah.
And then you test the egg to see if it's fertilized. And then you wait for the mother to come back so you can do the mitzvah.
Well, you can send her away and is on the possibility it's fertilized. And that's already the mitzvah. And if it is, you did your mitzvah.
No, why does she have to come back?
She just needs to.
She doesn't.
No, I was just saying, if you didn't do the mitzvah the first time, you want to come back for the second time.
Oh, for a second.
Now, a few important practical notes about this mitzvah. The mitzvah is only to send the mother bird away. Now, many birds, the father does incubate the eggs at some point during the day. It's very common amongst birds. So you actually have to know that it's the mother bird, not the father bird. That can be done. Well, there, I mean, many birds you can tell by the colors if you do a little research on birds, the patterns on the bird. Also, scientists say that it's 100% that mothers incubate at night. So if the mitzvah should be done at night, ideally, poskim say, because then you know it's the mother bird. During the day, often it's the father bird, but it's always the mother bird at night. That's a scientific fact, apparently. So therefore, poskim suggests to do the mitzvah at night's the best idea, because then you know you're getting the mother off the eggs. But if it's during the daytime, you should at least know your signs of birds to figure out is it the male or the female who's sitting on those eggs. There is no mitzvah if it's the father. And then at that point, you're just causing distress to the bird, which is not good to do. So you should make sure it's the mother bird before you do this mitzvah. If you can't go at night, you could do it during the day. But again, you should do your research beforehand to be sure you're dealing with the mother, not the father. Another
with the fertilized egg.
With the fertilized egg. Well, if there's a father, then we assume it's fertilized. So, I guess.
So it's not like a carbonyl.
I guess.
Where
it doesn't matter what the gender is.
No,
yeah, correct.
Gender.
Correct. Yeah, this makes a difference. Because the Torah says, ha'eim ha'banim, the mother is on the eggs. Has to be the mother. Another important practical note is that if the bird's nest is actually owned, there's no mitzvah. So if, let's say you raise chickens. Right, you're a farmer, you raise chickens, there's no mitzvah to send those chickens off their eggs. It's only because the Torah says when you happen upon the bird's nest, it can't be one that's already in your possession. So the question arises, Noah pointed out that he has birds that may nest in his potted flowers in his carport, right? Or people might get birds nesting in their backyard. So there is a concept halachically that things that move into your property become yours. Automatically. It's called kinyan chatzer. Things that are in my property become mine automatically. So the question would be, maybe a bird nesting in my own property, I can't do the mitzvah on because I own that nest. So there's a few parts to this. Number one is just to understand, any animal that comes and goes, you don't acquire. So if a deer runs through your property, it's not yours. The difference is that the eggs do not move, so those, once they're laid, become yours. However, the halacha is, you only actually acquire the eggs once the mother bird has gotten off of them for the first time. Right? So, if you see her laying eggs, and she didn't leave yet, then they're not yours yet. That's number one. Number two is that you can have in mind, right now, if you want to, right this very second, that for the rest of your life, you don't plan to acquire any eggs in your property automatically. And once you make that stipulation right now in your heart, then you don't have this issue anymore. So if we all in this room right now, we say, any eggs that are in my property, I don't plan to acquire automatically through Kinyan Chatzer, through acquiring through the property, then I don't own them. Because I've just now, in my own, I've precluded the whole possibility in my own mind. So I could do that. It's kind of like that. It is kind of like that. Bittul.
So does that mean it has to be done basically in a rishus rabim, unless
you make the stipulation, don't acquire it.
You don't know if somebody has it in their property.
But there's one additional point. Now, modern day poskim say that most of us have no use for birds' eggs at all. We don't want them. Besides for the mitzvah, we have no interest in them. So there's grounds to say that things that you have no use for, that your property will not acquire, automatically. So many poskim say that nowadays this rule will not be so relevant because we don't acquire eggs in our properties. We don't really have any interest in the eggs. So there's that to rely upon as well for this mitzvah. But the best thing would be that, if you say currently that now any eggs that any birds that nest in my property, I don't plan to acquire those eggs, then you're good for life, basically. So that's suggested by poskim. So when they do nest in, now I have birds nesting in my carport yearly also. I have my sukkah beams stored, in the rafters of my carport, and I have sparrows that always go in and make nests in the sukkah beams.
Yes.
So I thought the sparrows are actually more complicated to Shulchan Aruch. I'll talk about why. Yeah.
When you started this part, you said if the nest is actually owned, then the mitzvah doesn't apply. But then you talked about the eggs being owned. If the bird builds a nest in your property, the nest doesn't come and go.
Right.
So do you acquire the nest?
Oh, so the eggs are the main thing. The eggs are the main thing. Unless I said that wrong. It's the eggs.
Okay.
It's the eggs. The eggs are the chicks. So if the eggs or the chicks are owned, that's when we can't do the mitzvah.
Well, the chicks can't be owned because it's not something that's in this world now.
No, once they hatch.
Yeah, but you can't make a kinyan on it now, so it can't be yours.
No, but let's say you were to make a kinyan and then afterwards want to do shulchan, you couldn't do that. Let's say you made a kinyan on the chick. You put it back in the nest. Later on, say, well, I can do a mitzvah now. You want to shoot the mother bird off, you've already lost your chance.
Right, but if the chick isn't born yet, you can't make a kinyan on it.
Right, but on the egg you can.
But if you're talking about kinyan chatzer.
Any kinyan. I can't make a kinyan something that's
right,
not,
but once the chicks,
this world.
The question is, once the chicks are hatched in your rishus.
Oh, that's different. Yeah.
Then you can make... Have you made a kinyan? If you haven't made the stipulation, have you then thereby acquired them by kinyan katzer, and therefore you can't do the mitzvah?
Right. So that's an important rule, which is very relevant to things that nest in our property. Now, the other important rule, which you're asking about before, is what kind of birds is applied to? And the mitzvah is only upon kosher species of bird. So the word used in the Torah is kan sipor. The word sipor indicates a kosher species. There's the word oaf, which is a general word for, you know, I guess, fowl. And then the word sipor is a word that indicates a kosher species of bird. So the Gemara says it has to be a kosher species of bird. Now what determines a kosher bird itself is a discussion, which is worthwhile to at least touch upon right now. We know there's some birds that we eat. Mostly in America nowadays, mostly chicken, turkey, and duck. That's about as far as we go typically nowadays in America. However, we do have tradition to eat other types of birds as well throughout history. And the rules about kosher birds are as follows. The Torah gives the signs, it gives a list of what birds are not kosher. Which technically means any bird that doesn't fit that list is kosher. The Torah's list is not a humongous list. It lists, I don't know how many species, but it lists, you know, a good number of species of birds that are not kosher. And then anything that's not on that list is kosher. The problem is identifying what those words mean in that list is not so easy, because you're talking about identifying a species that is described in the Torah 3,000 years ago with a modern day species. It's hard to know which species is what. So the Mishnah does give us signs of a kosher bird. I mean, just like we know there's signs of kosher animals, split hooves, chew their cud. So kosher birds do have signs. The signs of a kosher bird are, there's really four major things. The first and I guess most important sign is that there's something called a doris. If the bird is a doris, it is not kosher. What's a doris? So that's mistranslated as a bird of prey. That's not really what it means exactly. You know, again, I don't think you find birds of prey that are kosher, but the word doris doesn't mean a bird of prey. The word doris is a bird that exhibits certain signs of either it claws its prey as it eats it. That's one opinion on what doris is. It can catch food out of the air rather than having to take it down to the ground to eat. Some say that doris has to do with the way that it uses, you know, its claws, the way that it uses its whatever you call those things on the ends?
Talons.
Talons, right? It uses those. But it's a certain behavior which, you know, often would indicate a bird of prey. But the word doesn't mean bird of prey. The word means it has those behaviors. So you could find birds that may not be clearly birds of prey that exhibit these behaviors that wouldn't be kosher. Now, the Mishnah gives a sign. How do you know if it's a doris? One sign of a doris is that if you put it onto a wire, it'll split its toes, two in the back, two in the front. You ever look at how like a hawk perches? Like how birds, if you look at birds of prey, they perch. They're going to split their fingers. Whereas a kosher bird will have usually three in the front, one in the back. You can go out, look at the robins perching or look at the crows. You can see differences in how different birds perch.
Does a pigeon do it that way?
What, two in front, two in back?
No.
Three, yeah, no, so that's good. That's kosher. Right.
Pigeon is kosher?
Yeah, pigeon is kosher. Yes. The carbonas were pigeons. The pigeons are certainly kosher. Right? So the telltale sign of a non-kosher bird is if it's a doris, and one way to tell that is how it perches on a line. That's one way you can tell that. The other three signs which are relevant when it comes to identifying kosher birds are, number one, it has to have what's called etzba yaser, extra finger. So the extra finger, like we said, many birds will have three and then one, right? So the three is the regular amount, and the one is the extra finger. Happens to be most birds have the extra finger, so that sign's not going to tell you all that much overall. But it has an extra finger, has to have what's called in Hebrew zefek, a crop. You know, the crop is part of the digestive system of a bird, and when it eats the food, it first goes into this pouch called a crop, then goes down into the stomach. And the third is that the gizzard has to be peelable. So the gizzard's like the bird's stomach, the pupik. And the gizzard on a kosher bird, on the inside, will have a membrane that peels off easily. Whereas a non-kosher bird, it's really one thick mass. You can't peel off any membranes on a non-kosher bird. So if you want to go try this at home, you can go check it out. But or take my word for it. So this is your signs of what makes a kosher bird. Now, there's a big difference between eating it versus shiluach hakan. When it comes to shiluach hakan, any bird that we can assume is kosher based on the signs We'll do the mitzvah upon. So some birds we know are not kosher. You know, a hawk, an eagle, a raven, those birds are not kosher. But most common birds out there, there's definitely has the signs of being kosher. A robin, a sparrow, a pigeon, a blue jay, you know, these birds that we see around the neighborhood, those will have these signs. So for Shulchan Khan, you can do the mitzvah. When it comes to eating birds, we only eat birds that actually have, in addition to the signs, have a mesorah. It has to be tradition passed down to us. Generation to generation, these are kosher birds. That's very limited. So a good shochet, when he's brought a bird to shecht, he won't shecht it unless he knows there's a mesorah on this bird. So you go outside, you catch a bird, you say, oh, that looks tasty, you bring it to the local shochet. He'll question, but he'll make sure that bird has a tradition to eat. Even if you look at all the signs and it looks kosher, you can't rely upon that. You have to have a tradition. So common birds that we do have traditions upon, so we mentioned chicken, duck. Turkey is actually very controversial. We eat turkey, that's the minnow, but turkey was all controversy because turkey is a New World bird and it's hard to have a tradition on a bird that was discovered in the New World. So that could be a discussion for another day, why we eat turkey. But Gadol eat turkey, everyone eats turkey. Apparently, Israel is one of the highest turkey-consuming countries in the entire world in terms of per capita. So we do eat turkey. But turkey has to have a tradition somewhere along the way, which has to be explained. What's that tradition? Pigeons and doves have a tradition. Those were used for karbanos. The bird karbanos were pigeons and doves. Sparrows have a tradition. Sparrows are kosher. You could eat a sparrow. I don't know how much meat's on a sparrow. But
eat two.
Yeah, you got a few sparrows. You can make something out of it. But sparrows have a tradition. And there are more. There are more that have, you know, certain communities have traditions on. But to eat a bird, it must have a mesorah. If that's a mesorah, we don't eat it. But Shulchan Khan, any bird that falls into the kosher signs, you can do the mitzvah upon. I'll just show you. There's a very good book put out. I think it's a Feldheim book by Shulchan Khan. Very well done. But besides having the ideas of the details of this mitzvah, he has a section on how to identify different kinds of birds and how they nest and what are their nesting habits so you can figure out how to do the mitzvah. He also has a section with color pictures, as you can see. And he also has a section about which birds we actually have a tradition to eat. And he lists here the pigeon, the dove, the sparrow. The quail has, according to most, a tradition. Pheasants, many say, have a tradition. The European robin, not the American robin, which is different, the European robin has a tradition, according to many. Also, a blackbird has a tradition as well, according to some. So those are the ones that have a clear tradition. There's actually another book which he quotes here. This is interesting.
Who's the author?
The author of this is... It was actually first put on Hebrew, and it's translated. Naftali Weinberger is his name. So it's a modern-day sefer. But there's actually a more classic, an older sefer, which was... actually had in it pictures of birds he had traditions about. It's called Zivchei Kohen. This is put out, I think, in the 1800s. And he draws pictures of about 30 birds that he had tradition to eat. Some of these are disputed, but interesting, he has in here a peacock, which is very interesting. I can't imagine a peacock. And it goes through the whole list here of which birds, you know, a skylark, a greenfinch, gargonade, oh, that is partridge, different things which you wouldn't have expected. So we don't always rely upon this picture, even though it happens to be, you know, an older source. But there is a source to say that these birds may have a tradition upon them. Not our topic for today, just while we're on it. There are certain birds that are very controversial at times in history. They have literature about, is there a valid tradition upon them or not? One of them is this interesting American history. One of the first major halachic issues that came out of America in the 1800s was the mesorah upon a kind of duck called the Muscovy duck. And the story is that there was a rabbi from Germany that became the rabbi of New Orleans. His name was Rav Eloi. He was active during the Civil War. There's actually stories about him during the Civil War. Different art school books have passages about Rabbi Eloi during the Civil War. But he comes to New Orleans. And he sees that the Jews in New Orleans are eating this funny-looking duck he's never seen before. And it was a different breed than typical duck that we're used to. I think that, you know, most of our ducks are of the mallard breed, and there's like another kind of duck out there, which was where this came from. So he questioned, like, you know, what's the mesorah on this? Where's the tradition that we can eat this duck? And the people of the city said that their chazen had a tradition on this, you know, from previous generations. The problem was, their chazan was not a religious fellow. And he writes in a letter that this guy had a store that sold pork on Shabbos. So can you trust the tradition in the hands of the guy who sells pork on Shabbos?
So it's that okay to sell pork on
Shabbos? Right. But I guess it's a double whammy against him. So he actually wrote letters to the Gedolim in Europe about this, to Rav Hirsch and others, about this issue. And this is really one of the first major controversies of halacha that came from America in the mid-1800s. I think they decided he decided they shouldn't eat this duck anymore, this type of duck. But you do have in history different birds that came up that certain communities were eating, others didn't, they didn't know where the Masorah came from, they had to track down, is this really a valid Masorah or not, to eat this bird.
Well, how was he holding on turkeys?
Who? Rabbi Yehuda?
Yeah.
Only on Shabbos.
Everyone ate turkeys even then. So, turkey, the funny thing is that turkey people accepted and after the fact figured out why. And many Gedolim have written why we eat turkey, but turkey was this funny controversy that everyone kind of ate turkey and then afterwards questioned why we're eating turkey and came up with explanations why turkey is okay. So, turkey, I guess with Thanksgiving around the corner, we can have a turkey talk. But back to Shulchan Khan. So for Shulchan Khan, we don't care about the Masorah on it. We just care about, does it have kosher signs? So again, most birds you're going to see around in a typical setting like ours will have these kosher signs, and therefore you can perform the mitzvah upon these birds. So now we know how to do the mitzvah. The question is, what's the meaning of this mitzvah? And this is also a mitzvah which I think many of us have a misunderstanding of. I mean, for good reason, but the common understanding of the mitzvah is that's compassion upon the mother bird. Right? You know, the mother bird to take her eggs or her chicks while she's there watching is causing distress for the mother bird. And we have to be compassionate people. It's not fair to the mother bird that we're going to do that while she's watching. So we send her off. We take while she's not looking, and that's not as painful for her. That's the common tradition. However, many of the halachas of this mitzvah don't seem to suggest that, such as that she could be there watching. Right? We suggest, as long as she's off her nest, it's okay. Also, the fact you don't have to actually eat the egg, so then you're just sending her off for no reason. Why would that be a mitzvah? And there's a lot of points about this mitzvah that don't seem to suggest that it's fully about compassion on the mother bird. So I just want to go through some different explanations of what the meaning behind this mitzvah could be. One explanation given is that there, overall in the Torah, there's an imperative not to destroy species. We know that we don't tamper with species, such as grafting different fruits, kilayim, things of that sort. So in addition, we don't want to exterminate species. So exterminating a mother along with her eggs together, that's a action which is tantamount in some way to you're cutting off a whole line of birds over here. Right, and that would be that besides the cruelty part of it, which is not the focus right now, that's tampering with Hashem's creations. Because Hashem put into the world birds, He wants this mother bird to go off and lay more eggs and survive. So therefore, you can't take the mother and the eggs all together. You have to make sure the mother is away so she can survive. She can go and make another nest and lay more eggs, and then you could take and use the chicks or the eggs. But it's the idea that we shouldn't interfere with God's creations, therefore we shouldn't cut off species in that way. That's one idea. There's another idea, a more Kabbalistic idea, that the Zohar talks about. I'll read you the passage, he quotes it in here. The Zohar actually says that the compassion of Shulchan Khan is not towards the bird, rather what it does is it triggers compassion of Hashem on Klal Yisrael. So how does that work? So it's really the opposite. The Zohar says we're actually causing pain to the mother bird. I mean, it's pretty distressful to be thrown away from your kids and have them taken away. I mean, chas v'shalom, imagine such a thing. So the Zohar says, when a person sends a mother bird away from her nest, she is so distraught, the mother is so distraught, that she wishes to drown herself in the ocean. During her flight, she laments the loss of her nest and grieves over her offspring. As a result of this great anguish, the angel who is in charge of the birds asks Hashem, doesn't it say in Tehillim, "V'rachmo kamasav," that Hashem has compassion on all of His creations? Why'd you command man to send a mother bird away from her nest? Look how much pain you caused this mother. So when Hashem hears the angel's supplication, Hashem gathers together all the other angels and declares, "This angel's concerned for the welfare of a bird. It complains of its suffering. Why then do none of you care to take up the cause of my chosen nation, Klal Yisrael? Why are you not similarly distressed by the fact that the divine presence, which had its place of dwelling in the Beis HaMikdash, has been sent away in exile from its domicile? And why do you not petition me on behalf of my exiled children, who are neglected and abused by the pagan nations?" So the Hashem's Shekhinah is actually compared to a bird. And Hashem was on the Beis HaMikdash. That was like the bird's nest. And Hashem was sent away. And now, you know, we as the children were left to be taken by all the other nations. It was a mini Shiloh HaKan, or a big one, big Shiloh HaKan. So Hashem says, if you're so concerned for the distress of this mother bird, what about the distress of the Shechina and the distress of Klal Yisrael, who were taken away from their nest? And therefore, at that point, Hashem directs compassion towards Klal Yisrael and bestows upon them beneficial decrees and helps out the downtrodden and poor. He proceeds to forgive his children for many of their sins and iniquities. And then he proclaims, praiseworthy is the one who fulfills the mitzvah Shiloh HaKan, for he causes mercy to descend upon the world. So this explanation of the Zohar is fascinating. It's actually the opposite of the conventional wisdom of how this works. Usually the mitzvah is viewed as an act of compassion upon the bird. The Zohar is saying, no, this is actually an act of distress on the mother bird. And that act of distress, it somehow triggers divine mercy upon Klal Yisrael. Because Hashem says, if that bird's distressed, you're concerned about the bird, then be concerned about me and my children. So that's how the Zohar looks at this mitzvah. Very, very different than the way we usually view it. In contrast, the Gemara does seem to say that there is compassion to the bird involved in this mitzvah. And there's a major discussion, a very interesting discussion here amongst the Rishonim. The Rambam and the Ramban have a discussion, do animals really have feelings in the first place? I mean, there's a lot of talk here about the mother bird and her feelings. But do birds have feelings? Do birds have emotions? I mean, it's instinct, but it's very interesting because the Rambam, the way he describes the mitzvah, he says that animals do worry for their children just like people do. There's no difference, he says, between the worry of an animal and the worry of a person upon their children, because the love of a mother and her care for her child is not intellectual, it's instinct. Even for a human, a mother's love for children is part of them. It's instinctual. It's part of their instincts. So the Rambam says that the mother bird has feelings. And she cares for her children just like mothers care for their own children in the human world. And therefore, it's not compassionate to take her kids right from under her. So you want to send her off, take her kids and she's not looking. That's the Rambam. Yeah.
So both of these mitzvahs about this one you're talking about and honor your father and mother, both of them have the addition on there, so to prolong your life, prolong your life, right?
Right.
So it seems to have in common, like respect for parenthood. Unless the question is there any other mitzvah that has attached to that? If you do this, it will have prolonged life.
Those are the two that actually says it explicitly about it. So those two. It's interesting. I think I'm going to talk more about that later, maybe. But those two mitzvahs that do have that point. That's a very good point. So the Rambam says the point of this mitzvah seems to be that we want to not cause distress to the mother bird. The Ramban, Nachmanides, he says that he can concede that animals may have feelings, but he says the Torah is not interested in the bird's feelings. That's not the point of the mitzvah. The Ramban says that the Torah is interested in us becoming compassionate people. Meaning the Torah is supposed to train us, train human beings to be better people. That's the point of the Torah. Hashem doesn't give this mitzvah because he cares about the bird. Hashem gives mitzvah because he cares about us, and he wants us to grow from it. So if we act with cruelty, whether or not the bird has feelings, you know, that could be a different discussion, but if we act in a way that appears cruel and seems to somehow have a sense of cruelty involved in it, that will make us into cruel people. If we do things that seem compassionate, that makes us into compassionate people. And we have to make sure that our actions always have within them training to make us compassionate. I would bring, as an analogy. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked the question about stepping on bugs. Is it okay to step on bugs or not? So, logically, it's certainly fine. For sure, if it's bothering you in your house, for sure, fine. And even, you can even justify stepping on a bug. No, not bothering you, just, you know, there's no prohibition of stepping on bugs. But Rav Moshe says that the more you kill living beings, even when it's okay, you become a cruel person because you're losing your sensitivity to life. The ant's a living being. And yeah, you say, what's the big deal? Step on this ant, step on that, step on the other ant. But the more you take life and mess around with it, then you become more numb to life yourself. We're not saying you'll become a murderer, God forbid. We don't mean that. But it just means that, you know, the sensitivity is somehow, you know, somehow dulled towards life because you're always killing things. And when you're always killing things, you become less sensitive to life itself. So here as well, you know, even whether or not we care about the bird, whether or not the bird even feels it, you know, I'm acting insensitive to a living being. And therefore, that will cause me to become less sensitive to feelings and to living beings which are out there. if I have to act in a way which appears compassionate, not that it appears cruel. So this is actually the contrast of the Zohar. The Zohar is saying that this act is an act of cruelty to the mother bird. And really the conventional understanding of the Gemara and of the Rishonim is that this is actually an act of compassion. So really two ways. And we kind of sense both in the action. On the one hand, the fact she's sent off, you know, is distressed. She's thrown out of her nest. On the other hand, at least you're not taking your kids out from right under her. So there's two sides to it. Some Rishonim say that the purpose of this mitzvah, the idea of this mitzvah, is you don't want to exploit the mother bird's maternal instincts. I mean, usually, if you have to go and hunt and catch a bird, it takes some effort. You know, they're quick, they fly away. When a mother bird's on her nest, it's very easy to grab her, because she doesn't leave her children. She protects her nest. So a hunter will say, great idea. You know, I don't have to go out and worry about trapping the birds. I'll go find nests and jank off all the mothers. So what you're doing at that point is you're exploiting the fact that she has a maternal instinct to protect her children. And even though the Torah allows us to hunt and catch the birds for our own usage, that's okay to do. But don't catch her when she's vulnerable. You know, that we draw a line that if you want to hunt, do your work. If you want a bird, then go catch it fair and square. But when she's acting as a mother, don't exploit that instinct and trap her in that manner. To add to that, so the Shemi Shmuel writes, this is one of the great Hasidic masters, he says that the Torah allows us to use animals. Now we know we can catch animals, we can use leather, we can eat animals. We're by no means vegetarians, according to Torah law. However, the reason we're allowed to use animals is because we as humans feel we have an advantage, a superior quality to animals. We have the neshama, we have a spiritual element, we have a mind which is superior, so therefore we can take things which are like animals and utilize them. However, the Torah does say, for instance, you can't eat blood of an animal. Why not? The Torah says, Adam hu ha-nefesh, because blood is the soul. Blood is the life force of the animal. And commentaries describe that, because you can eat the animal part of the animal, but any part of the animal which is, let's say, above its meat, its animalistic side, that's off limits to you, because that's the animals have a soul as well. There's a nefesh in animal, the Torah says. Animals are living beings, and eating the blood is where the life is contained. So eating the blood is essentially eating something that has a higher element beyond just the meat, beyond just the animal side of it. So that's not allowed. So the Shemi Shmuel says further, if you were to take a mother bird off her eggs, she's right now conducting herself in a way which is human-like. She's caring for children. That's something which is you can admire in a bird. Animals care for their young as well. And to take her off her eggs when she is right now acting in a more spiritual, human-like way, that would be then, we've lost our advantage over her, because she's also now acting in a way which has compassion and care for other beings. So at that point, you can't take the bird. When she's not on her eggs, she's back to being a bird, you could take her. But when she's actually in the act of mothering, caring for young, being that that is actually a much more human-like trait, at that point she's off limits. So we want to be sure that when we use animals, we're not exploiting them, and we're not using them in ways which show their higher elements. We only use them in ways which show their lower elements. That's his point. Makes a deep point, but an interesting point. So there's all different ideas behind the mitzvah. Ultimately, you could say it is a chok to some degree, that none of these ideas fully explain what's there. All these ideas give us sort of an idea, a sense, but none of these ideas, even together, really explain the mitzvah fully. Those are the ideas brought to describe what the idea of the lesson of this mitzvah is. It's one other important part of this. Shiluch HaKan has in it many, many segulas. There's many different rewards that the Torah guarantees for this mitzvah. And it's interesting, more so than other mitzvahs. That's why, even though it's not an obligation, many try to proactively pursue this mitzvah at least once in their lifetime, because there's so much that comes from it. So number one, Phil mentioned, it's the pasuk itself. The Torah says that if you do Shiluch HaKan, it says, Aman yitav lach, Hashem will do good for you, v'rach diyamim, and you'll live lengthy days. So the Gemara says it doesn't mean in this world, it means olam haba, but there's a special reward guaranteed for the mitzvah. Number two, the Medrash says that this mitzvah has a segula to help people have children. People don't have any children, this is a mitzvah to help have children. And that's because the Torah says, you send away the mother, and the abanim tikach lach, and you take the kids. So that's an allusion, that's a remez, that's a hint to saying, not only do you take the bird's kids, then you will also merit to have your own kids. It's also looked at as a segula for marriage, to bring someone who is not married to marriage. It's looked at as a segula to be able to acquire a house, because the very next verse in the Torah says, when you build a house, it says send off the mother bird. Next verse says when you build a house, da 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 da. So it's brought as segula to, for a house. It's also brought as a segula for bringing Mashiach. And I guess this might relate back to the idea of the Zohar, the compassion is aroused in Shemayim when this mitzvah is done. So this is a really power-packed mitzvah, even though it seems to be one we don't do so often. It's kind of strange, we don't fully get it. But the rewards that you're offered with mitzvah go beyond many mitzvahs. Now, it's not magic. I mean, if somebody wants to get married or have children or need a house, doing it doesn't mean, poof, you get it. But it means that this is a certain merit which contributes to these goals in life. You know, so this is something which, you know, if someone's trying to build up merits to be able to reach a certain goal, this is definitely part of that merit to build up to get to that goal. So it's a mitzvah. Every spring there are opportunities around. You know, even so, I was mentioning before, I have every year in my carpet we have sparrows. The problem with sparrows is sparrows are known to nest deep within crevices. So to get to that nest, the sparrow's nest, it would be, I've never done it in the sparrow's nest because I'd have to take off all of the poles of the skak which it's nesting in, and I'm worried by then I might kill the eggs or something because you can't get in with your hand. They go deep in because sparrows know to nest deep into crevices in trees, crevices in forests, things like that. But certain birds nest out in the open. I think that doves and pigeons, their nest is pretty out in the open usually, and you can kind of just get to it. The American robin, also the robins usually, they have those really bright blue eggs, if you've seen them. They're beautiful eggs, but they nest out in the open typically as well. Often down at the Kent Mill Park, you'll see the geese on their nests. So you may not want to do it there because the non-Jews, what are you doing? Why are you terrorizing those geese? But the geese, they nest out on the ground in the open, and the nests are very accessible. So if you have next spring when you're looking around, when you see a nest, it's definitely a mitzvah, which is at least once in your lifetime to do is something very special. Many gedolim, this book actually has another section of pictures of gedolim of doing the mitzvah, and many gedolim would look for that opportunity to do this mitzvah. And you have pictures here of. Somewhere in here. Pictures here of many, many gedolim on their ladders or with their sticks or their umbrellas, climbing onto different trees or surfaces to do Shulch HaKan. So it's something which people go out of the way to try to do, and it's definitely, if you can, it's nice to do once in your life at least, Shulch HaKan.